The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 8th of November, 2018. On the podcast today, I have George Roach, Chief Executive Officer of Premier African Minerals, PREM sticker there, and George explains the restructuring of the Zimbabwe Minerals projects. I also have on the podcast John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about Keras Resources, that's KRS. We also talk about gold, cobalt and iron ore. Plus, Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covers the following companies with news out today: Burberry, Sainsbury's, Halfords and Superdry. I also have two lists. The first one is the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs out in the last 24 hours. You can see both these lists, top tens of them, that version of top tens in both lists, oh yes, on the front page of voxmarkets.co.uk.
If you're looking to diversify your portfolio and allocate to unquoted companies, Rockpool, one of our sponsors, offers growth equity and high-yield lending for established and profitable private companies. Investing can be tax-efficient, and Rockpool Services is based on thorough due diligence and continual company monitoring. Capital at risk. Visit rockpool.uk.com or call 0203-8548-100.
And joining me on the podcast right now is George Roach, Chief Executive Officer of Premier African Minerals, that's PREM. George, thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you indeed. It's good to be chatting to you, and thanks for the opportunity.
That's all right. I'm assuming there's quite a few people would like to hear this, because you've announced, well, proposed restructuring of the Zimbabwe mineral projects and conditional purchase of exploration and mining assets, and proposed demerger and separate listing. There's a lot going on in this announcement, and I know some shareholders seem to be angry about what's happening. But before we talk about this, George, there are people who don't know or not familiar with Premier Africa Minerals, so I'd rather not assume, but can you just quickly summarise what you're all about before we go into this announcement?
Sure. Premier has a number of exploration and development assets, and one that had progressed to mining, generally based in Zimbabwe. It also has an asset in a small shareholding in a private company called Circa Minerals that has quite a significant NPV. Prem is concerned with bringing its RHA tungsten mine in Zimbabwe back into production as quickly as possible, and it is in that context that we are proposing to shareholders a restructuring deal.
Okay, all right, yeah, so exactly. Take us through what is happening in the restructure, and then we'll delve into why you're doing it afterwards, okay?
Sure, I will. What is proposed is that Premier will create a new company, and that the new company will acquire the assets of an existing operating business in Zimbabwe that is concerned with mining, contract mining, and exploration. And at the same time, will also acquire the management of this company that is an experienced mining and contract mining entity in Zimbabwe and based and located in Zimbabwe. Premier would then vend into this new company its Zimbabwean-based exploration and mining development assets. The new company will seek a listing, preferably on London and preferably in a standard listed vehicle, and will look to raise directly into the new company based on the valuation of the new company sufficient funds to ensure that Premier's assets are then brought properly to production and properly advanced and developed. Now, I think it's very important for me to say at this stage that this entire transaction will not proceed without consent of shareholders. So whilst there has been an adverse reaction so far, I think that most of this comes from a perhaps lack of proper explanation of the transaction from my perspective, but also not a clear understanding of the merits and benefits of the transaction and the rationale and the reason why it is being proposed. So from a benefits perspective, should this transaction proceed, and at a point when the new company is listed, the equity in the new company that would come to Premier would in its entirety be distributed to existing Premier shareholders at that time on an equitable basis, shared completely and 100% of it distributed to our shareholders. This leaves Premier shareholders in a position where they would have their retained interest in Prem as it is today, plus a shareholding in the new company. In terms of the remaining Premier African Minerals, it would remain with its asset in the Circum Minerals Potash property that has a reasonable value, we believe. We hold it at a value at the moment at $1.25 per share that we hold, for a total approximate value of about $6.5 million. That remains with Prem, and to the extent that that develops and or appreciates in value, that would be for the benefit of Premier shareholders. At the same time as this transaction proceeds, should it proceed, operating and management costs within Premier, the remaining Premier, would be cut dramatically. The new company would assume responsibility for all operations within Zimbabwe and on the various properties, that's the Zulu project, and on RHA. It would be responsible for all of those costs, all of those developments, and that is expected to proceed and to proceed at significant value, particularly as a further condition of that is that the equity situation in RHA must be resolved and settled as a condition precedent to the completion of that deal. So in analysis, by doing this, Premier shareholders benefit by holding shares in Premier and will then receive shares in the new company. Dilution that could occur in Premier related to Premier needing to fund Zulu and or RHA any further would be restricted. And the valuations and development within the new company are likely to see and also to be enhanced by new management within the new company, and we would expect to see a reasonable market capitalization develop through RHA coming into production in short order and at a much reduced operating cost and also reduced capital cost. Similarly, the work at Zulu would proceed in terms of the DFS at a much reduced cost, as the new company will be its own exploration company, has its own drilling rigs, has its own equipment, has its own mining equipment, has its own management, is fully equipped, and effectively would be its own miner and its own exploration company. I hope that that helps to some extent to explain the transaction.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's quite complex, and I have been listening intently and to understand it. I sort of understand. So why? I mean, in a sense, you're saying it's being done to what helps shareholders, because of reduced costs, because you're putting the cost across the new company, and then Premier would be holding Circum shares on its own and share. So it seems very complex, but do you think it'll be beneficial to shareholders?
I do, but it, as I've already said, it'll be for shareholders to assess. It's going to need a lot more discussion, and I'm happy to have the discussion with shareholders directly as well, which I think I've already indicated in my press release. Let me make this point that had we not progressed in this direction, had we continued to try and seek a better alternative joint venture, and I can only come back to a previous failed transaction that we had with Zulu, had we gone back down that route, I believe that the dilutive effect in terms of the percentage of the projects that we would have been able to retain would have been significantly less at the end of the day to what we will now have. For example, at the moment we only have 49% of the RHA transaction. With this new proposed company, the company itself, the new company, would hold 90% of the RHA transaction. Valuations for business purposes, for deal-making purposes, and valuations of the asset in the new company are not necessarily one and the same. When the additional equity attaches to RHA, we believe that the value of RHA will be significantly greater. And that is going to accrue ultimately to the benefit of Premier shareholders in any event. So going down this route, the extent to which Premier and Premier shareholders lose equity at the end of the day in RHA, as an example, is in fact simply not there. And prior to financing the new company, our interest in RHA would actually have increased. So we are of the view that the transaction has significant potential future benefits for Premier shareholders.
Okay. So if I'm going to be devil's advocate here, George, and I'd say, let's say a Premier African Minerals shareholder says, well, you're saying it'll help or improve shareholder value. Now, you haven't done that in the last few years. What's the change here? Why should people, you know, believe you now?
Well, the concept of improving shareholder value has two components to it. One relates to the development of the asset. And the other relates to the perception of value that a shareholder agrees and is happy to place on the asset. In our instance, we have had ongoing difficulties with RHA that have accrued for a number of reasons, not the least of which is the continued 49-51, the massive reduction and now recovery of wolframite prices, and various other difficulties that have all been expressed and explained. Shareholders have expressed, and some of them have been quite pointed and rude in terms of our management and myself. And this also clearly represents an opportunity to take the asset and put it into a new management structure that perhaps shareholders will approve of, and perhaps will be a mechanism for removing what may be seen as one of the reasons why appreciation of the value of Prem, in terms of its assets, in terms of Circum, in terms of the potential, has not come through to date. I hope that helps a little with that.
Marvellous. Okay, so if a Premier African Minerals shareholders listen to this now and they want to vote on this, either way, so that's happening at the general meeting, and do you know when that's happening yet?
I don't know. The announcement was only made today. The procedure that we need to go through is that there is certain DD that needs to be completed, not the least of which is a fair and reasonable valuation on the KME assets. That needs to be provided. If there's a discrepancy of more than 10%, there should be an adjustment. So that needs to be attended to. There are various other DD items. Much of this was done as a precursor to the announcement, so there isn't much. And we then need to get a definitive agreement drawn. The moment that happens, we can then approach shareholders with a date for a general meeting and a recommendation or suggestion that we proceed. In the interim, I'm happy to engage with shareholders to whatever extent I am able, and will do so, and will make the necessary arrangements. You know, if shareholders as a collective entity are going to demonstrate that this is a deal that could not be supported, well, then it's not going to go forward. But it is our belief and our view that this represents a very good opportunity for RHA in particular to get back into production very quickly, and for progress to be made on Zulu, and that at the end of the day, as that happens, and in the lead up to a listing of NewCo, or a planned anticipated listing of NewCo, that real value as it comes through in NewCo will represent real value to Premier shareholders, quite apart from the retained interest that there will be in Prem. And that is a different discussion. There will be further announcements that I anticipate in regard to Prem as we go forward. I'm not quite sure if there's much more I should try and add to that, or if there are specific things you'd like me to try and deal with.
No, that's fine. I mean, you know, in your obviously opinion and the board's opinion, you think this is the best route to create shareholder, you know, value?
Justin, under the present circumstances, mm-hmm. with the difficulties that we have experienced in the past, with the ongoing delay coming out of the Zimbabwean government, with all of those factors, with the until just very recently, with a market capitalization that, in my personal opinion, is nowhere near reflective of what Premier's value is. With all of those things coupled together, I feel that this represents a reasonable opportunity and a better way of progressing Premier, or progressing those assets for, as I say, the benefit of our shareholders. And I'm one of them. I'm probably longer suffering than anybody else as a shareholder in terms of Prem. So I'm one of them. And I would personally support this, and would expect to see that KME's management in Zimbabwe will deliver, and will deliver rapidly.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous. George, thank you for coming on. It's much appreciated, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future when there's more detail about what's happening. Thanks very much.
Sure, Justin. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. All right, John.
Yes, good form. Thank you.
Now, there's not that much corporate news around, is there? But, things always move, things always happen in the world. So I'm looking at that currently, the metal prices. And the day after the midterms, or yesterday, which is yesterday, every metal price was up. And, strong. And I'm looking now, they're all down, apart from lead, which is up by just under 1%, and tin, which is up by just by a quarter of 1%. So it's not looking very bullish today. I mean, maybe a rally yesterday. And in fact, copper's the biggest faller today at 1.5%. But what's your thoughts? I mean, with gold is nearly in in positive territories. And normally when you see all the metals down, gold, you know, normally stands out as being up, you know. But I noticed we just talked before we came on about Keras Resources have announced some results from, is it Calidus? Who they are the biggest shareholder of that, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They own a third of Calidus, and they have an agreement to exercise more shares in that going forwards. I think it's when a feasibility or is announced. So they have a good stake. It's increasingly valuable. Calidus announced some more positive drill results this morning. Nice grades and intersections of gold. Not the best we've seen, but not bad, and just adds to the value of that story in our view. So we think Keras is looking quite good. And of course, in the meantime, they're beavering away in Africa to produce manganese ore, and that's looking quite good. So we're hoping the real value in Keras will be from the manganese production side of things. But in the meantime, they have this value that's been created on their behalf by these gold assets within Calidus. So that's a nice thing to have.
Yeah, I'm looking at these results. They seem quite good. They're at 6 meters at 7.61 grams a ton, including 40 grams per ton, 1 meter at 40 grams per ton from 16 meters. That's quite decent, isn't it?
It's close to surface. It's the kind of thing that's very mineable. It's the sort of thing we like to see in the mining industry. So. And I think the thing about gold is the price has a bit of positive momentum behind it. A lot of the fast speculative money that was in Bitcoin and other sorts of speculative ideas, I think, is dribbling back into the gold market. We saw a couple of central banks underpinning the market recently. And in fact, they were buying gold, having been historical sellers of it for quite a while. And that's quite nice to see the market being supported by those big buying institutions. And I mean, they're not trying to ramp the price or anything like that. They're using that effectively as a currency hedge in a world where there is more currency volatility than there used to be. So we saw the Chinese central bank intervening to stop a further decline in its currency. I mean, I think it's managing the decline of the renminbi, and that's quite sensible. And that helps them to offset the impact of new Trump tariffs that come in from Trump. And it's going to take a little while, I think, for Trump to sort out his tariff negotiations. But in the meantime, the midterm elections have made it difficult for Trump to be too crazy in what he does.
And I know it's a longer term play, but I think gold, you know, is a good play, because you know what you've got there, we can see it happening. And I'm watching CNBC today, and they're talking about the Fed tightening, and they say there's a good they're not going to raise rates today, but there's a chance, I think 85% or 90% chance they will raise rates in December. Probably 2 or 3 or 2.5, they said. They vote on 2.5 more raises next year. And so we know the stock market, you know, doesn't tend to perform when interest rates go up. And also, they're reducing their balance sheet, which is the equivalent, they're saying, to one or two hikes on top of that. So they've had all this quantitative easing. So they're pulling that back in. So when money's been pumped into the markets, so when the markets, you know, get suppressed, gold is what to look for. So I think now positioning yourself into some decent gold stocks or doing some research on gold stocks is a good play, because we know over the long term, over the next year, next 2 years, I think, you know, uncertainty will be afoot, and it'll be a good play to, you know, just good. It's always good to have gold in your portfolio, you know, and I think it's not harmed. Look forward, see what's coming up, and knowing, we know it's coming up, we know what's happening. And that very rarely happens with stocks and shares. We normally get something coming from the left field you don't see happening, but we know this is happening, you know? So it's something you can play to, a strength. I think gold will be strong in the next few years, you know?
Yes, and you know, I think it has sensible fundamentals now, and there are some quite good, well-shaped junior gold miners to look at. I mean, we've clearly got the Barrick Randgold merger going on, and that's gained a certain amount of support on the condition that the companies pay out increased dividends. That was the shareholder demand for that. And if we look further down scale, companies like Anglo Asian Mining, which are also paying dividends, are increasingly popular in the marketplace, and this is good all around.
Yeah, cool. You mentioned cobalt before we came on, and you said something interesting happening there. What's happening?
Well, Glencore produces about 25% of the world's cobalt, and most of this is coming out of the Katanga mine. They discovered in the week that they were mining over the legal limit of uranium. I guess they got to a part of the mine where the uranium content was a bit high. And you know, it's normal for there to be a little bit of uranium just generally in the Earth's crust. And when you're mining, you might find higher concentrations in certain places. So you generally check for it. And so what they've done is they've stopped cobalt production in that area whilst they... figure out how they're going to remove the uranium from that, which is a fairly simple thing in processing terms. What's more complicated is figuring out how to store it. But they'll remove that and store that, and then they will resume cobalt supply again. But what that means is that for a period of 12, 18 months, there will be reduced cobalt supply into the market, and cobalt prices are likely to go back up again.
Yeah. Okay. And... I'm just wondering if I have any exposure to cobalt. I think I do a little bit, but it's not a major commodity.
It's difficult to find companies that really do it. We've got a number of companies that are looking for cobalt from an exploration perspective and have cobalt licenses. So, for example, African Battery Metals and Strategic Minerals both stated that they have ground with cobalt showings and they're looking for the metal. But no, there aren't many actual cobalt producers around, which is part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Now, let's talk about a runaway train, shall we?
Yeah, well, yes, the BHP introduced driverless trains faster than they had expected when one of their train drivers actually got off an iron ore train in Western Australia to check something. And while he was off the train, presumably he must have left something on the old dead man's handle that the train drivers use, because the train took off. And somebody at the Rio Tinto Railway control centre must have spotted this, and they managed to derail the train. But by the time they derailed the train, it was doing 200 kilometres an hour, we reckon, by our calculations, and it was pulling 28,000 tonnes of iron ore behind it. So if you work out the kinetic energy of 28,000 tonnes moving at nearly 200 kilometres an hour, it's about 11 tonnes of TNT equivalent.
That is faster than most intercity trains in the UK, isn't it?
Well, it would be nice if my commuter train would go that fast. But it probably wouldn't make it round the bends either.
I can imagine you there sitting on a tump of coal there, John, or a train, you know, just shuttling into the city. But, that's a heck of a speed, and you wouldn't want to be anywhere near that when that comes off the track.
Well, and the problem is it's ripped up, I imagine, several miles of railway track in the process. I mean, it's good that they flicked the points so that it would derail deliberately. But it's going to cost them quite a lot of money to fix this. I mean, in terms of BHP's earnings, it's not that material. But the iron ore price is moving ahead as a result. And I suspect there are going to be some delayed iron ore shipments out of Western Australia as a result.
Yeah, I know, not coal. Yeah, wow. That is nuts. So, how much was on there again?
It's only 28,000 tonnes on that train, 268 carriages. If you think that's an awful lot of carriages, if they could stick a few extra carriages on our trains in the UK, it might be quite helpful. But the point is, the rest of the, no other train can use that track. For now, until it's fixed, and I suspect it'll take a week or two to sort out the mess.
Yeah, well, it's very rare you hear complaints about a train going too fast, especially in this country. You know, it's usually the other way around completely. But there we are, John. Thanks for that, fella, and look forward to speaking to you next week.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of financialorbit.com. You're right, Chris?
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Justin. Very good.
Yes, and I know you keep an eye on the big stocks there, but a lot of sort of high street and retailers are reporting today. And do you know what? I did say in a tweet, I think a week or so back, I think it was off the back of New Look having to shut more stores, and they said they were going to have to shut. But I said, I think this year will be, you know, regarded as the death of the retailer, of the high street, because it's non-stop. It's back-to-back, isn't it? Every week there's a company, a retailer, that's closing shops or going into administration. It's just a really hard market. I think we now are now seeing a sea change. I mean, people blame rates and stuff. They probably have a lot to do with it. But I just genuinely think people like the convenience of online shopping. You know, I do. Before you answer that, Chris, I've got to explain to listeners, we've had a bit of technical issue, and so you've gone to the phone. But what's your thoughts, Chris? Online, I think it's convenience. Obviously, rates staying it. What's your thought about retailing?
Yeah, it's a mess. You know, you've got two issues here. You've got the cyclical issue. The economy is difficult. Consumer spending's all over the place, and that's impacting demand in the consumer space, in the retail space. And then, of course, you've got the structural factors. The fact that people just seem to prefer or are shifting towards online, and that's having an impact too, particularly on those more legacy models. And you can see that through some of the consumer names reporting today.
Yes, yes. Well, let's go into them. Who is reporting, Chris?
So a couple of things. Let's start high end. Let's start with Burberry. Burberry numbers, actually, they didn't show much progress if you look on a sort of a sales or a profit perspective, depending on whether you stripped out exchange rate impacts or not. They were sort of either up a bit or down a bit. But bottom line with Burberry is, actually, I think this is all about the change of the brand. They brought in a new CEO and a new chief designer. Obviously, designing is super important for a business like Burberry. And it's always a bit of a risk when you do that, because of course the designer might do something silly, might change the brand, might just have no resonance with your customer base. But so far, actually, that seems to be going quite well. The new collection they had was quite well received, particularly in China, and it is sales in Asia which are doing well for Burberry at the moment. The laggard actually was more the Middle East, among other areas. So when I look at Burberry, what I see today is actually a company that is, again, it's learning the best lessons of the big European fashion names. This is where this new CEO and chief designer have come from the sort of Italian and French high fashion industries. And the thing with Burberry is it's not on a high fashion sort of multiple. It's still a fairly cheap stock in the sort of the luxury space. But they are delivering still on things like sales to China. That's still going up a lot. That's around about a third of their sales now to Asia. But also, they've got really good progress on things like digital engagement and linking up with their customers on Instagram and stuff that sort of you and I, Justin, don't really know too much about. Mm. So what strikes me about Burberry is, you know, it was really out of favor a few weeks back. It's at 17 quid a share. It's a big old support level. It's bounced off that level before. And actually what I'm seeing here is actually Burberry looks pretty good value. And I'm not surprised that the share has come off up in recent weeks. I think it's going back to £20 plus.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It's, you know, keep it simple. It's at the bottom of the chart, and it looks like it's bouncing, you know, from support levels. So, you know, like I said, if you want to make it as simple as possible, buy low, sell high. At the moment, they're low, you know.
Yeah, that's right. So it's high fashion, low share price. There you go. It's possibly a better combination than the other way around.
Yes.
But the moving on, going from sort of high fashion to something much more mainstream, which is Sainsbury's. Mm-hmm. Sainsbury's had some numbers today, and obviously Sainsbury's, you know, it's a classic sort of aspirational middle class kind of place to do your shopping. But they've actually been a bit radical in recent years. They obviously took over Argos, and the numbers today are thick with comments about the synergies they're getting from the Argos deal, and they're clearly very happy and excited about that. They've actually hit their targets months ahead of expectations, so well done to them for doing that. The reality, though, is that Sainsbury's is all about where it's going, and obviously they've got this potential merger with Asda, which they're very hopeful about. Clearly that still hasn't passed competition authorities. They're having a good old look at it, and why not? But I think ultimately it does pass. And of course, what you've then got is the big four in UK food retail. coming down to the big three. So obviously that's a big opportunity. Clearly that's not too impacting their numbers at the moment. Like-for-like sales up 0.6%, a bit thin, and profit down as well, reflecting the fact that they are changing the business so much. Argos integration, Sainsbury's bank transition, and of course they are spending money in anticipation that the Asda deal is going to come through, and they're going to make a killing with that. So, you know, Sainsbury's shares, it's very much, when you look at it, it's kind of in a bit of an upward channel at the moment. They've done very well year to date because of the Asda proposed deal, but it's not going nowhere fast over recent months as sort of people wait for the deal to get cleared and basically Asda and Sainsbury's to be allowed to get on with it. My feeling is this is a deal stock. If you're enthusiastic about the deal getting cleared, then this share probably ultimately goes higher. But in the short term, whilst you're waiting, there are easier things to be doing. So I think Sainsbury's is a wait story for the moment, and it's okay. I don't own it, but I'm not rushing to buy it either.
Yeah. I mean, do you think this is the way forward? I think, you know, these big sort of supermarkets have to find some way of cutting it. Don't they? I mean, is there some kind of M&A going on, or are there supermarkets looking for other avenues, you know?
Yeah, well, the thing is, of course, online is a big thing with supermarkets. And clearly what Argos has given Sainsbury's is that capability in things like next-day delivery. Obviously, Argos have had huge historic experience with the catalogue and everything to do with that. So I think that's why they bought Argos. It certainly wasn't because of the sparkling profits that the Argos business generated, because it frankly didn't. But they bought it for that know-how and technology. And they're sort of slowly integrating that into the Sainsbury's offering. And obviously, if you throw even more volume through it with Asda, potentially that becomes even more efficient. So, you know, supermarkets are in a difficult spot. They've generally got sort of big stores and obviously relied historically on people coming to the stores. Sainsbury's weren't quite as excessive as perhaps Tesco's were in building those real massive out-of-town stores. They still got a bit more success with the mid-sized stores and the convenience stores. So I think, you know, they are playing with all these new formats. But the reality is that ahead of perhaps not just the German discounters gaining ever more market share, but also perhaps people like Amazon ultimately coming into food delivery, I think the Sainsbury's Asda combination, it's a bit defensive, but you would have thought there's a hell of a lot of opportunities that go with it. So I think in that sense, Sainsbury's are positioning themselves to be survivors, irrespective of sort of change going on in the retail environment.
Marvellous stuff. What else are you looking at, Chris?
Well, a couple of ones which are sort of reliant on things to happen, really. Halfords has had an absolute shocker year to date. The shares have been terrible. And today's update, you know, they didn't fortunately cut numbers again. They cut them just a few weeks ago, so they at least reconfirmed their lowered guidance. But, you know, when you read stuff like lower retail operating momentum, sales mix towards less discretionary categories, it's not happy. You know, clearly they're struggling a bit, and it's way beyond the fact that you know they're selling a few less bikes as the winter, as the weather gets cooler. It's the fact that, just what do you really go to Halfords for? And you know, it's a bit of a pick and mix sort of store. The kind of the auto side, some of the auto repair side is absolutely fine, but sort of the classic core retail offering, yeah, maybe they're a specialist that you would go for all the different constituent bits, and that's starting to reflect itself in their shabby performance. What they're saying is that they're still hopeful of a turnaround, and guess what they've said today? They're saying that their trading performance is going to be hugely dependent on their peak Christmas period, and also assumes average winter weather. So basically, if you're thinking that we're going to get a freeze, where perhaps makes you running to the store to buy some antifreeze or various other sort of winter car stuff or mudguards for your bike or something like that, then maybe Halfords is the play. But if that doesn't happen, expect the profit warning in early January. So Halfords remains, you know, a difficult one for me. I'm not enthused by it. It's not, to me, a must-go-to store, and hence it's not a must-go-to share.
Yeah, well, do you know what? You'd have thought, you know, Evans Cycles, what's happened with that? That went through, didn't it? But did the guy from, what's his name?
Yeah, that's right. No, Mike Ashley from Sports Direct has purchased the sort of the assets there. You know, Evans Cycles is, again, a funny one because obviously that was a private company. But again, you know, if you're really into cycling, you probably don't go to Evans Cycles. And if you're not into cycling and just want a sort of a pickup sort of bike, maybe you would go to Halfords. But the fact that you've got different options and Halfords are struggling tells me I'm not surprised that Evans Cycles was struggling too. So again, it's reflective of the variable consumer environment and, you know, the fact that life is not easy out there.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've got to say, I've had nice experiences at my local Halfords, but, yeah, you know, that's not the story. That's not the whole story. okay.
Well, the final one I was going to say, just on winter as well. So, you know, we've got a couple of winter plates here. If you think there's going to be a freezing winter, buy Halfords. You know, I'm not sure, convinced myself. The other one is Superdry, where obviously Superdry, you know, famous for their kind of wacko pseudo-Japanese T-shirts and related with their name and a few characters on the front of them. They've had all sorts of excitements over recent months. Not only a big old profit warning not long ago, but also the founder of the company, who has kind of left the executive team a little while back, criticizing publicly in the press the direction the company is going. Now, this matters because he's got a slug of shares still and clearly a lot of influence and credibility. So that's sort of quite exciting to sort of watch. Today's numbers reflect the fact that there's stuff happening. I mean, there was a couple of fantastic stats talking about the importance of a cold winter for them, including the wonderful 55 to 60% of autumn winter sales are in jackets and sweatshirts for Superdry. So, you know, that's another company which desperately needs a cold winter, a discernible sort of cooling of the seasons. Otherwise, you know, they are suckered. The flip side of them is that they've got the founder agitating now, saying there is a better way for this company again. It's gone off the rails since I left it. Let me come back and rerun it better or change a strategy in order to reflect a better way to run the business. So for me, unlike Halford, Superdry is getting a bit interesting. And you look at the current share price, and it seems to be getting a bit of support in recent weeks. And I think that's all to do with the fact that people are hoping that, in a weird way, if there's more bad news, that could be good news as the founder comes back and starts to sort of throw his weight around a bit more overtly. Maybe there's a private equity bid. Who knows where it might end up? But for me, Superdry is starting to look a bit more interesting. Don't own their T-shirts, but thinking about owning the shares around about these support levels, about eight sort of the £8 level seems to be an important one for them.
Yeah. I mean, do you know what? I've got, it's funny, I don't know if I told you this, but my wife decided me to buy lots of Superdry stuff. When I said I liked one thing they had, she started buying me lots in sales. And now my wardrobe is 50%, anyway, casuals are ordered, 50% Superdry. And it's gone overboard. I've got, the logos are too big. I'm like a walking advert for Superdry, and I don't like it. I want something now more muted, less Superdry. But I think I'm one of these people, like many sort of almost getting onto some, I'm late 40s, you know, just slipped into the Superdry wardrobe accidentally because their wives have been overly enthusiastic. But now I'm going to pare back a bit, and I think it'll affect their sales, like everyone else doing the same thing, I think, you know?
There you go. Well, that's it. And, you know, fashion brands come in and out, even sort of casual fashion brands like Superdry. So you're right. It was very, very in for men of a certain age to be sporting their T-shirts and whatever. But it kind of fell a bit out of fashion. And now they're trying to find their way a bit. And they've maybe over-diversified, or as Peter Lynch wonderfully called it, diversified into sort of different areas. But ultimately, they still need that cool weather. It still seems to really work. So I think this is one to watch. That £8 level's really interesting, or below £8 level's really interesting level. They bounced off it, or bounced off levels when it fell below there. I'm keeping an eye on this one. This one strikes me that maybe something's going to happen. Maybe not, because they're trading wonderfully and profits are wonderful and etc. There might be other things going on.
Yeah. Marvellous stuff. Chris, thanks for that. Hopefully we're back on normal service resumes next week.
Next time. Hopefully. That sounds good. Thanks a lot, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Bahamas Petroleum, that's BPC. At four, Primoris Investments, that's PRIM. At 2, Prairie Mining, that's PDZ. At 2, Totally, at TLY. And number 1, most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, is Bidstack, that's BIDS. Okay, top 5 most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, Tuple, that's Holdings in Company, Tuple. I think that was Stephen Davis has gone up to 3.35% there. Okay. At 4, it's 88 Energy, proposed placing to raise up to £5.9 million. At 3, Primoris Investments, Stream TV Investor Update. At 2, Lions Gold. That's about the delisting. I don't understand why that's liked. Really odd. And number 1 is from Anglo-African Oil and Gas. Sorry, it's AAOG, of course. That's an operations update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.